Hello, I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
And I'm Chemda.
Welcome to My Opening Line, where we talk to performers about their first times performing, whether it's on stage or in stand-up. It's all very exciting and especially humiliating. Be sure that you have the app from Laughable. Go to laughable.com, download it for free. And you know how you subscribe to podcasts? Well, with this app, you can subscribe to the person.
So you can subscribe to a guest who actually doesn't have a podcast that they host, but you can follow them on other people's podcasts.
Yes. Let's say you're watching True TV, right? And you see the show, You Can Do Better. And you go, I like the host of this. I'm going to type in her name, Abby Crutchfield. I put it right into the Laughable app. Anytime she's on any podcast, I know immediately. Let's say she goes, you know what? I'm going to be on a friend's podcast. Only their parents are listening, but who cares? Let me make their day, get personal. She doesn't know. Mm-mm. I'm going to find out.
It curates that for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Comedy Central, NBC, CBS, like I said, True TV, Abby Crutchfield.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Abby.
Thanks for having me.
Are you as happy as you seem?
I think so.
Because usually I hear it's the opposite.
Oh, I mean, I have moments of sadness, but like in this moment, I'm super happy to be here with
Excellent.
You guys.
Excellent.
It's like when you go away and then I have to stare at the sidewalk and start thinking about life. Like, hello, darkness, my old friend starts playing.
Well, we're going to find those moments right now.
Okay,
whenever you started. Hey, by the way, how long have you been doing stand-up comedy?
I've been doing stand-up since June of 2004. So that's 14 years.
That's a while.
I had an anniversary that just passed. I didn't even celebrate.
So that's got to be longer than any job you've ever had, right?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Yeah. Congrats.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. That's it.
it didn't become my career, and it didn't pay until 2011. So 7 years would be more appropriate. You know, stand-up starts.
Dishwashing didn't pay either, but I still counted it as a job, you know? What got you into stand-up? Was it watching good performances or bad performances? When we started podcasting, there's a podcast or three already out, and I'm listening to them going, oh, no. This isn't how the whole thing begins. Mm-hmm. Not with yous, right? What did you find?
That's funny to see someone that's not good at it, because that usually is what makes you go, I could do that.
Yeah.
For me, no. I watched good stand-ups through Comedy Central. It was the era where they were playing a lot of stand-up mashup shows. So I got a good dose of everybody that was in comedy clubs and on television for it.
Did you remember? So, I remember I didn't have Comedy Central as a kid, but you kind of end up seeing a little comedy here and there. Mm-hmm. But I never remembered people's names. Did you have?
Yeah, because that's the beauty of the shows. The clip shows would show the name, just the way music videos would show the name and where it recorded and what show it was from. So Marc Maron, even Bob Saget, Sandra Bernhardt, and Ellen DeGeneres, Sinbad, those were like some early faces I would see and memorize their names with their jokes, what they were doing.
What did you think of their jokes? Did you connect with any one of them?
Oh my gosh. Well, they were adults. And so I was a little kid. So I think just like any little kid at the comedy show for the first time, when other people are laughing, they just laugh as well.
Oh, that's funny.
So could I pick up? No. And the funny thing I do is I watch
can't
a lot of.
I imagine little Abby listening to Marc Maron. He's like, what the fuck is happening?
She's like, I wish I could remember. I remember Kathy Griffin had a bit about shaving her underarms, and I didn't even know that arm hair grew under there. But it was about like a razor being really awful and just kind of tears you up. And I just was like, yeah, that's hilarious. But I think about it every time I shave my underarms now.
I was an asshole to my little brother. We'd be watching a sitcom and he'd laugh. And I'd look over and be like, you don't know why you're laughing. What are you doing?
Probably true though. Right. Probably true. That is such a sibling thing. But yeah, so I watched a lot, and that's that, you know, and then like I would mimic being a stand-up with my friend. If we came over, we'd jump on our bed and like talk into his hairbrush. So like the concept of stand-up was really cool to me, you know, and it didn't become like a viable career option until after college, when I gave up like everything that I thought you needed to do to become an adult.
What did you take in college?
In college, I was studying to be, oh gosh, what was it? My degree's in foreign service. So I guess technically I was preparing to be a foreign service worker.
What does that mean?
I still don't even know what they do. Aid, a foreign service aide, a foreign service employee, and a government employee. I think a lot of people.
You didn't get far enough in your course to know what you were taking.
I reached my senior year and realized that everybody else had either like applied for grad school or applied to be stationed in the foreign service abroad for 2 years, like kind of like Peace Corps. I unlearned everything I knew back then anyway. So I'm gonna talk about it like I have no idea what it is.
Did your parents pay for college?
Yeah, my mom did, and I got some financial aid, yeah.
Was she mortified?
She didn't, no. She never showed any interest in...
You.
Yeah. I was just there. No, she never had a driving thing of what she needed me to be. In fact, like, she was a nurse, and my dad was a doctor, so... I always am surprised she never pushed me into the medical field, but she just kind of went with the flow. And
maybe that's telling. She's like, don't do it.
Yeah, yeah,
don't do it.
Well, she would always encourage me in what she thought were my gifts. So if I was like, if I made her a greeting card for Mother's Day, she'd be like, you should go into business as a greeting card maker. And right. She would be like, you'll be the youngest person to do it. You will, you know, she was really into like your independent, do your own business thing. And that, wow, of course, is a huge turnoff to a kid because, you know, I just want to draw a picture. I don't want to make a business.
I wish I was encouraged with the things I was able to do at a young age. Mm-hmm. I didn't know you can do things in your 20s. I didn't know that. Apparently everyone's doing it, right?
Yeah, well, even today, like if a kid has, yeah, anything can become a job in America, it seems. Right. You know, how long that job will last is another story. But yeah, I think that to her credit, she was always super encouraging of that and never pushed me in one way or another, unless you count.
Until I started stand-up and she was horrified.
Then she was my manager and it was really awkward. No, even stand-up, I thought she was encouraging and it was only like, you know, 6-7 years into it. I was like, you've always been so encouraging in my career. And she goes, I don't know. That's what you were doing. So it was kind of like this hands off. It wasn't like an, I believe in you, but it was more of a,
do you?
That's what you want to do? Yeah, do you?
That's cool.
Yeah. But super supportive, comes to all the shows. And if I told her like, I got an audition, she'd be like, oh, this is great. You're going to get it. You know? So she is encouraging.
It sounds like the Pete Davidson character where he just goes, okay. And the woman's like, oh, I love it. You're so silent, but you say so much. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh my God. Well, go out there. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to go get him because of your encouragement. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you dabbled a little in stand-up when you were in college?
So in college, yeah, that was when, well, I had auditioned for the local improv group, which was kind of legendary. Even at that era, Mike Birbiglia and Nick Kroll had graduated, but they were like the founding members. Mm. And then they passed the torch on to John Mulaney.
What's
his
name? What's the name of
it? G-Pig, Georgetown Players Improv Group.
Okay.
Did you know those people? Like, were they a thing to you?
No. Okay. And I didn't, you're right. I'm telling it like in hindsight. But at the time, I knew John when I had auditioned for, like, hello, I'm John. Let's do your thing. You know, like, that's when I first saw him. But I didn't make the team. And so I was like, I wanted to do improv. I wanted to do comedy on campus. And that was like the way to do it. So I thought it's going to be really weird if I start my own improv group because that one is kind of established. So instead I thought, well, stand-up's a comedy thing too. And so I originated a stand-up club.
Wow.
Called SUPA, the Stand-Up Players Association. I have no idea. But I remember SUPA was supposed to be funny.
So you took your mom's advice and started a business.
I did my own thing. And comedian Lance Weiss attended the career fair where I was like pitching my club and he joined to be in the club. And then...
How were you pitching your club?
I did stand up. I literally was like, all right, everybody, time for my performance.
In the living room?
Yeah, I forget what they call it on campus, but the business center, I think it was.
Okay.
Maybe that's what it's called.
What benefits did you offer?
And so, cookies.
Okay.
If you come, I will make cookies, which I did. But here's the thing, I didn't see it. I had no idea what we would do as a club, whereas the improv group would say, here's a show, we're going to work towards it, here are some games we can play, I'm guessing.
Right.
What I did when I did get some recruits was tell them where to meet and when to meet, and we met in this room, and I passed around the cookies, and we just chatted, and then the thing was over, like for the hour that it was there. Who's your name? What's your name? What do you like? Cool. Which class are you taking? Great. You know, and that was it. Yeah. And so probably by the third one of these meetings, someone was like, are we ever going to perform stand up? And I was like, yeah, definitely. And I was terrified by that idea, but I was just like, okay, I got to pick a date. And
because you're taking a risk, maybe you won't respect each other anymore.
It really was more like, I'm going to have to do this since I lead this group.
Right.
Whoever else, I knew I was going to have to do it since I led the group, and whoever else wanted to participate could. So I set a date and then I worked out more material, part of which was the same material I used.
What was that material to recruit?
Some of it I remember was, I'm from Indiana. We have the state fair and my favorite game to play is that a pig or your child?
Oh, Jesus. And, oh, my God.
And by the way, let me add this. Abby is extremely attractive. So it was an insult comic a bit,
you know, it's going for something edgy. And yeah, my roommate still repeats that joke back to me. So that's the only reason I know it. But I had a whole 5 minutes or whatever, I guess, that I did to pitch the actual club. And then afterwards, I remember, I don't know why, there was like some kind of apples on a string thing where it was like as part of this career fair day where everybody's showcasing their club fair. They were like, who wants to participate in the apple eating contest? And I volunteered so that it would get attention for my club. So, and I won, by the way, is an apple hanging on a string and you eat it without using your hands. That's the whole point.
And she's picking on the pig kids.
Can you imagine? How? What an image, right? Speaking of apples and mouths. So you did do a show? So we did ultimately do a show on campus, and it was on the steps of like a main hall in the
picnic. How'd you book that?
I asked people in the club. I sent an email. I'm like, okay, guys, here's our show date. Who wants to do it? And two other guys said they would do it. And neither of them went on to do stand-up. I keep checking on Facebook to see if they ever ended up in entertainment, but no. But they were really, to their credit, like super likable on stage and funny and brave. And then I remember at that performance, I did a joke about Laura Bush, who was the first lady at the time. And it was just like she was being interviewed. And they were like, you know, what are your thoughts on education? She's like, do you like my suit? I think it's very beautiful. It was just like this. Her focus was just about that. And that got the laugh, whatever it was. Oh, yeah? The act out of her just keeping the conversation on her outfit for some reason.
And did you feel good after that show? Like, oh, this is something.
I just felt relieved that it was over, which is a good kind of foreshadowing into a lot of my career. I think I didn't get a hold of that anxiety until a lot later. But, you know, fast forward to after college, I went back home to Indiana and we had a comedy club called Crackers. And I happened to run into some old high school friend.
You had a comedy club called Crackers?
They still do. Yeah.
In Indiana.
Yeah. And comedians can kind of play on that word a lot. Black and white.
They definitely can.
So Crackers was the name of the club. And this guy that I randomly connected with, we decided to hang out at the club. And that's where I found out they had an open mic. So it was more of a like, what am I doing with my life? You know, you're reconnecting with those random people you met like growing up through your childhood. But now you're both adults. So it's like, you know, maybe we're going to be friends now. And so we hung out at the club and I was like, gosh, I would like to do that open mic. And he's like, you should do it next week. You sign up. And so I signed up that night to do it the following week. And that was an actual comedy club, an actual stage, actual spotlights, none of which I had had previously, and an audience of strangers. Although I did pack the house with, I think, 10 friends from high school. I told them on Facebook, come see me. And they came and they wooed for me.
Do you consider this comedy club your first time?
That's my official first time doing stand-up. I don't know if you can count the other thing I did in school. I mean, technically, I wrote jokes and I performed them, but it wasn't, the atmosphere wasn't, like, that one that I did on the steps of the hall was to people having a picnic. So the first five people in the front were looking at me. Everybody else was playing with volleyballs and stuff. So I just didn't count it as actually having done. Same with the club fair. There's just people walking by while I talked at them with a microphone.
That's amazing, though. So when you first got on stage, first of all, did they intro you? And did they do it right?
They said my name correctly, but I didn't adjust the microphone. So the guy before me was shorter than me, and I just left the mic in the stand and had my head like cocked down towards looking at the ground the whole time, which is great when I'm so expressive with my arms and I'd be like, and then this happened, but my head would be straight down. So I remember being a waitress at the time, and I even wore my waitressing uniform, which is a black polo and a black skirt and a black apron.
Right. You wore that on stage?
Yeah, that was going to really sell the bit, I thought. But I wasn't in character. I was just, hi, I'm Abby. So I work as a waitress. Wink, 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 wink. And then...
And then you didn't make reference to being a waitress?
No. I told a joke about people who claim to be like, I'm on a diet, so I want the Parmesan with extra cheese and no pasta because I'm on a diet. I'm on the Atkins. And it's like, ma'am, you're not on Atkins. You're on Fatkins, which...
Nice. Oh, no.
That is a fat-shaming joke, ladies and gentlemen. I will own that is now. But at the time, I thought it was... funny.
Well, Abby, I don't have a calculator, but I'm seeing a pattern.
It rhymes. I am too. I'm looking at you, Keith, because I'm now remembering, and Carolyn Castilla remembers this too, and she kind of busts my chops about it. But when I was trying to think of how do I sell myself, you know, I think you have like a website and you need a bio. What do I write for my bio? So I think the opening line was, Abby Crutchfield is not your average female comedian. She's attractive.
Oh.
So yeah, and none of this is, all this, ladies and gentlemen and boys and girls listening, is why you're not funny when you start out. Mm. Like you think you are, and you're going for it. But this stuff, it didn't indicate how I was funny offstage to my friends, right, what I actually thought growing up, you know, like, or, you know. So I think that it's just, you're trying so hard to be like, what do people want to hear?
What did the fat joke get a laugh?
Atkins Fatkins in Indiana.
It's clever. That's
in 2004. Yeah, got a laugh.
Please understand, it was a different time and they loved it.
I'm only telling you the jokes of mine that I remember. And the only reason I remember them is because those are the ones that got a laugh. Like anything else that didn't, I just put out of my mind. So
you will know if you want to laugh at me or fuck me. See you at 8.
I have a VHS copy of it in my mom's house. I'd love to have it and then transfer it to whatever media you can actually watch
you
today.
You probably don't want to do right. that.
Well, for myself, I know, yeah. You don't need it seeing the light of day, but for myself, just to see how far I've come. Because even describing it, I remember only the feeling of being on stage, but hearing, being outside of myself and being like a, you know, 14-year comedian watching that going, oh, okay, I see what you're going for. Right. But at the time, I got big laughs. I was proud of myself for accomplishing it. I didn't use any notes, so it was all memorized. And I was really pressured at the time of like, get off when you see the light. You know, wrap it up when you see the light. And I did that. And we're watching a ton of other people like missing the light, blowing the light. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, I did that. So it was all like, you know, stuff that I was patting myself on the back for doing correctly and then encouraging enough to get on stage the next time.
Right.
Now, the next time, of course, I bombed, which is how it always goes.
That's first what I
time,
hear, yeah.
First time, your friends are watching, they're wooing, you're so relieved that you got it done. Next time, same jokes, they didn't work. And then the rookie mistake is to then change all the jokes. Like, okay, I'll just go on stage with something completely different.
Right. Do you say something to the second crowd? Saying, hey, so no. It must be you.
I mean, yeah, I don't think I wasn't. I didn't. I wasn't good. That bold. I just was like, it's well, almost
to
like.
To be clear, that's good. Yeah. I wasn't that bold.
If you're watching a thriller and you realize this person's been the killer the whole time, when they reveal that they're the killer, right, that's exactly how I felt like on stage. Like, my eyes grew wide and I was like, oh, that didn't get a laugh. What do I do? Right. And you start forgetting what you want to say and your mouth gets dry. So yeah, like all of that is.
And you still, after you got off that second time, you were still like, no, this is still it.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, I just won't tell those jokes anymore.
Cool.
I'll just write something completely different. So then, you know, the more time you do it, the more you realize, okay, it's going to take some time to get good at it, but I still think you're delusional. You're like, I'll be famous in a year. Right. I'll give myself a year. First five can go wrong if I can do it for a year. So yeah, I was patient with myself.
I'll take out the pig stuff. I know a friend named Large Marge.
Truly, never told the pig thing again. Never did the Fatkins joke after that night. I mean, it was just after the time that it bombed. And people would say like, well, you need to just write more. And that was true too. So if I only had those ideas down on paper, it was like, oh, here's what I need. More ideas, better ideas.
Well, getting back to the attractive thing, you get noticed on the street to be in a commercial. They don't ask if you have acting ability. They say, you're in, you're done. Let me tell you what it's like for the rest of us.
Yeah.
I get asked directions, I'm thrilled. Okay? So you get a job walking. What was the commercial for?
That was for, I can't tell you, but I know my line was, owning a home would be a dream come true. So maybe it was for real estate.
Okay.
Maybe it was for trailers. I don't remember.
And this was your first time on camera?
But this was my first time on television. Mm. So on camera, well, I guess like I remember being in a newsreel of like getting my eyes examined at a doctor's office. So, and we taped that. We videotaped it and then showed friends like Abby's on the news. So I guess technically second time on TV. But first time reading a line on camera. And so the funny thing about that, yeah, I was scouted, but that happens in Indiana a lot, or at least it did back then. I was also scouted for a modeling scam that I found out later. Mm. You know, like, that's just a business. So for him, I thought it was just another, well, we'll see what this turns out to be.
But you still show up.
But
right?
I showed up to a coffee shop because it was a public coffee shop, and I was also out of college, so I felt like, okay, I'm an adult now. I had never been to New York, so you have no concept of personal safety. Like it wasn't Mayberry, but I definitely grew up in a bubble feeling like nothing bad can happen to me. So,
but isn't that weird?
There were no alarms going off.
That I wasn't scared when I came to New York, but all I knew about it was movies saying it was scary. Where was the disconnect? Why wasn't I scared? But it's the excitement that attracted me.
Well, because it happened in Indiana. I think...
I was in Pennsylvania.
Are you talking about yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing. You know, I know it's an adventure because anytime I saw New York City, it was a movie.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be a bore, you know?
Especially movies we had growing up where it was just...
It was all about mugging.
Before it got cleaned up. Yeah, it was always like loud, noisy subway and tons of graffiti.
I guess we just knew it was better than our hometown. Like, one way or another, I'm going to die, right?
That's so funny because I grew up here and I just thought everywhere else was just maybe a smaller version of here. And, you know?
That's correct.
I really thought...
But you thought everything could be as diverse as New York, but just on a smaller scale?
I thought some diversity was very surprising to me when people were like, you're the first Jew I met. I never saw a black person before. I thought it's not your next door neighbor, but... Somewhere you're going to run into some. No, I didn't know. I didn't know you guys didn't have public transportation at all.
Right. Like,
but how do you get around?
Right. Yeah. Culture shock.
Like,
truly, it's so different everywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, kind of didn't know there were towns like this. There's a recent Ali G show who is America. And he's this liberal guy saying, we're going to build a mosque in your little hick town. And of course the town goes crazy. Mm. They're like, we're not having them in our town. We have blacks in our town and we barely allow that.
Wow.
I was like, you just said that on camera. Yeah, there's towns like this. And Kendall was surprised when she saw my hometown.
Mm-hmm. Oh God.
Which town?
Legit only white people in this town.
Yeah.
And they all know each other. It's so bananas. And then if you want to get anywhere, it's not like cabs are coming to get you or a bus. You have to call mom. Like, even in adulthood, I didn't even know what to do. And it was so quiet that I thought somebody was like going to come out with an axe and just murder us.
I love all of this. Yeah. The town my grandma, well, we would go to visit my grandma. It was a smaller town in Indiana. That is exactly what you're describing. And
don't understand
it's
it.
Different. Yeah.
How do you lie to your parents and then go to the city? Who takes you there?
So I do remember with that commercial, the home ownership thing, like it felt like I was doing what he said, which is say owning a home could be a dream come true. Right. And I did that line and I thought easy peasy. And then he was like, try it a different way. And I didn't know how to take direction. So I literally did it the same way probably 10 times. And with like, until my cheeks hurt because I was like looking, I remember bugging my eyes out and smiling really big because he was like, have some enthusiasm. Imagine it's your actual home. Imagine you really want to own a home. He was trying so hard to like get something from me. And so, when I finally saw what it looked like, that was like, oh, that's completely different than how it was going on in my mind. It was like my hair wasn't styled, nor was it trimmed. It needed a trim. It was super tangly ends. And the outfit I was wearing was like askew and the color was wrong and his lighting was horrible. And like I wasn't wearing makeup and it became obvious. So all these things that you learn about when you see yourself on TV for the first time, low budget TV or access, whatever, public access, that was a good lesson.
Was People Magazine TV the very first? Holy shit, this is a set. There's food.
No, because it was... No, let me tell you that one. Before that, I did an actual national commercial, and had a real budget. Had a director that I recognized from directing, like, Pink music videos on MTV. Ew. Like, this guy had been interviewed on MTV before, so I was like, this is legit. Had a crafty table, and I remember taking a picture of the food they were serving us and the menu. So that felt more posh. With People, it was a little bit scaled back budget-wise, but I had been in the studios doing a show for EW's YouTube channel. So Entertainment Weekly had a YouTube show. I subbed for someone. And that's actually how the folks at People knew to call me was because they had been in their files of like, oh, she's done this for us before. And
so they were looking. They called you. Does that mean you didn't need an audition?
No, I auditioned so that they could test. It was a screen test. They wanted to test me against the man they hired from LA, Jeremy Parsons, who's still at People now. He's a wonderful host and a really fun coworker. And
so you sort of had to match him and bounce off him well.
It was me, a black woman, a black woman. Mm-hmm. It was a blonde improviser, long blonde hair, and it was a white brunette who was a news anchor. So they had like three different styles of what they were looking for.
Is that weird, or do you already kind of know what you're into? Is that weird to go, I know that you are just placing my face next to this guy's face? And yes, you have to, I think you did an incredible job at People, and I thought that was a really tough job and that you were a really perfect person for it, because it's rough. You got to know the pop culture stuff, but also not say it dismissively. You have to
And doing it live, I think, was a lot of things I did really leading up to that job helped prepare me for it, but I've learned even more at that job to move on. So
how does that feel, knowing that you should be at this job? You have been leading up to it, but you have to look right.
Right.
And if a blonde chick looks better or somehow
that I don't take as personally, because if we're all different, I go, okay, then whatever they're picking, they know. And I had been through commercial casting process. I think my first moment that what you're describing was when I was on set for a commercial, and the client was like, we chose you. She had this like smoker's voice, and she was like, we chose you because of your beautiful pink lipstick. And I remember thinking, you didn't choose me for how I read the line or how I look. You know, it was just like your random choice. And
all I know is I'm not telling anybody where I got this lipstick.
Yeah. Exactly. It was my secret weapon for years. But it was kind of like, I've kept that line in my mind for years because it's
and you're wearing pink lipstick now.
I happen to be. But it's more about like, it's not up to me. It's totally on a whim. It's whatever that lady was in the mood for that day. And I randomly picked that, you know, lipstick that day. So I don't take it personally in casting. When it's other people who look just like me or same race kind of casting, and you know they want a specific type of whatever you're about to portray or of ethnicity and vernacular, to me, that's a little bit more, I get in my head of like, oh, should I do it the way I think they think Tiffany Haddish sounds, or should I just do it like myself and know that I might be costing myself the job or whatever?
What advice do you wish you knew younger? What does Abby wish somebody told her when she was young? What surprised you that you're I should have known better?
Yeah, I honestly don't think it could have come in the form of advice, because when I was young, I wouldn't have listened to it. And I think that's a good thing. You need to be delusional. You don't need someone telling you the reality of the entertainment business to scare you off of it.
Be delusional is her advice.
Stay unknowing everything. Because yeah, that's the thing. Everybody that starts out thinks they need to know. They think that by knowing everything, like, and I still get people like chatting with me over coffee or emailing me these questions of like, you can tell they're trying to figure out what all is involved so I can approach this the way a corporate job is approached and find out like, what are the milestones and what can I do and how do I educate myself? And then you cut through all that and the answer is just do it. And don't second guess yourself. That's what I would tell myself. Right. Because thinking that you need to refine something until it's its best form is editing yourself before you give it a chance, the audience a chance too. So you're pretty much telling yourself no before. So you should just say, yes, okay, I'm going to try this. I think this is stupid. Any self-doubt that you have in your head, you should then override it with, and let's do it anyway.
I love that, because I really think that a lot of the stuff that you're going to want to do or that you're going to need to do, you'll never find a good time or a good way to do it. So just do it.
Yeah. And it's advice I still have to give myself.
Right. Yeah. Because if we would have known what this entails or how weird everybody is or whatever, I don't know that I would have pursued it. Even though a lot of people don't go into entertainment, it's like a filthy, you know, environment and it's unstable and all that stuff. You just, as a younger person, you go, yeah.
Yeah. I heard all that. And I was still like, okay, right. Maybe for you, not for me.
Right, right.
So it didn't matter what I was told back then, truly, because of who I was at the time. But another thing I think would be helpful to know is that you don't, I mean, there's been a ton of good advice through the years, but you don't have to do anything that makes you uncomfortable. You know, it's very hashtag me too, but that's a lesson that you need to tell a baby when they're born, both, you know, any gender. So I
but
feel
how
like,
what a professional you are when Morgan Freeman does try to fuck you on the set of People TV, right? You go with it and you stay professional.
Are you joking? Because he literally was like one of my first interviews, and he commented on my boobs the second he saw me, and I totally thought that oh, I shouldn't have worn this low cut shirt today. What was I thinking? Rookie move, gonna dress. And then I read that article recently and I'm like, oh, everybody has this thought when that happens to them. Wow. They don't just assume, oh, this guy's a jerk to everyone. You assume I did something to make that guy.
So it's like good news, bad news. I follow.
Hindsight, 2020.
You can follow Abby, of course, at Curly Comedy on Twitter as well as Instagram.
Because she's got the best curly hair.
Thanks.
And anytime I see her do stand up, like I'm saying, she gives it her all. She doesn't lean against the wall and half-ass it. And I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you guys very much.
I whole-ass it.
That's right. She full-asses
it. Both cheeks right up there.
See? And now she knows to raise the mic to the cheeks, not the cheeks to the mic.
Thank you.
That's a professional. Thank you all very much. Thank you all that purchased my new album, Drip Drip. It's album number 15. You can get it at keithandthegirl.com/store. And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com. Mm.